Shalom. Welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein. I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We always want this to be interactive, so please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions about any topics anytime. Or you can follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and always reach out to us at genesis123.co. Stay tuned until the end, as we always do, offering you an exciting opportunity just for following. And please feel free to share this with others who you know will also find it of interest. Piers Morgan has millions of followers, and to many, he's regarded as a credible journalist, hosting hard-hitting interviews and contentious debates. For others, he's an elevated tabloid journalist, seeking clicks more than truth. While he's been outspoken about Israel's right to defend itself against Hamas, Iran, and others, and the terror and genuine threats that they have perpetrated against Israel, in recent months, he's become a loud and vocal critic of Israel. He's using terms suggesting that Israel's committing genocide, war crimes, and ethnic cleansing. And regardless of what kind of journalist you think he is, we certainly know now he's no longer impartial. Many have observed that not only have his positions become hardened against Israel, but he platforms people who espouse rhetoric, anti-Semitic tropes, and vulgarity more than they are credible commentators. Some have accused him of anti-Semitism personally, a charge he firmly denies. Many of his debates have devolved into verbal brawls, which may be good for ratings, but not really for truth or serious dialogue. Observers have noted that his hard-hitting interviews have become more softball fluff when encountering people with whom he agrees, and outright confrontational when opposite those who attempt to explain and defend Israel's positions. Today we have a special panel, two people who have appeared recently and I believe multiple times on Piers Morgan's program, Uncensored. Alphabetically, Shabbos Kestenbaum is a PragerU political commentator and former lead plaintiff against Harvard University, confronting Harvard's pervasive and systematic anti-Semitism. He's a regular contributor throughout international media and has testified multiple times in front of the United States Congress, as well as the Israeli Knesset, and he's lectured internationally on Jewish communal issues widely. Doron Spielman is the past vice president of the City of David here in Jerusalem, and New York Times best-selling author of a new book, which I really truly can't wait to get my hands on, called When the Stones Speak, The Remarkable Discovery of the City of David and What Israel's Enemies Don't Want You to Know. He's a major in the IDF Reserve, serving as an international military spokesman, providing frontline analysis to global audiences, conducting hundreds of interviews since October 7th. Well, Doron and Shabbos, I'm really grateful that you're here. Shabbos, your second time with us in Inspiration from Zion, and Jerome, you're first and not your last. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Let's jump right in. Piers, first of all, just by way of clarification, how many times have you each been on? We'll get into the nature of it, but I want to just set the stage how many times you've been on with Piers.
I've been on thrice, and it's all in the last 6 weeks, so I'm new to the game.
Wow, I didn't realize it was three times and so recent. They pop up a lot. Okay, thanks, Shabbos. I guess that means they like you or like having you as part of the confrontation. Doron?
Two times, and it's been since May. So it's also been pretty recent.
Also recent. Okay, so let me jump in. There's a lot to cover. I do want to emphasize for those who are following live to please use the Q&A feature here so we can answer any questions that are on topic. We do like to make this interactive. I think it's fair to say that Piers Morgan, by most accounts, stood squarely with Israel against Hamas and for Israel's right to defend itself following the October 7th Hamas attack and massacre. And I think this, it's fair to say that the same was generally true in the recent war against the Islamic Republic in Iran. In the past year or so, and I don't have my hand on the pulse, I follow, but I don't want to give credence to say that I'm really paying that much attention. He still claims to support those views, but he's come out much more hostile vis-a-vis Israel in the war in Gaza specifically. And I'm curious what your perspectives are, if you think that it's true, if that's happened, albeit that both of you have only been on his program in the last few months. And to the extent that that's true, and I have to give credit to the question from a former boss in the foreign ministry when I worked there back in the 80s, who asked the question, to what extent is Israel responsible for the for his flip in perspective? Daron, you want to start?
Sure. I think at the bottom line, we have to understand that Piers Morgan is driving ratings. Piers Morgan has 4 million followers, 5 million followers, 8 million followers, depending what platform you go on. He's the largest platform pretty much out there, debating platform around Israel. We have the Ben Shapiro, we've got Mark Levine, but if you're looking at a debate, it's really Piers Morgan, and he's driving traffic. At the end of the day, that's his interest, and that's what I believe his interest is. I don't know. I'm not inside of Piers's soul, inside his stomach when I walk down the street, and I'm sure Shabbos gets the same thing. People see you on Piers, and they want to know everything behind the scenes. What's Piers thinking? What's Piers thinking? Piers is a platform, and I think I see Shabbos smiling because he knows it as well. At the end of the day, if you go on Piers Morgan and you're looking at him in his face, you have got to understand he's a showman. He's excellent at being a showman. The fact that we're speaking about him now, that so many Jews are rattled by him, but that we keep watching him, he's not dipped into the category of some of the more recent, blatant anti-Semites that we've shunned completely and that have been shunned from Hollywood. He's not there. And therefore, it's like, the way I see it, it's like the UFC. He's the UFC of online debates right now. He's a classy host who has opinions that can be deeply, deeply disturbing. He hosts people that are deeply disturbing. He's been making complaints recently that are really not only uninformed, as I explained to him, they don't make any sense. Like if you take apart Pierce's arguments, when I asked him, what is the Pierce plan for Gaza? He really doesn't have what it is. But at the end of the day, I think, to answer your question, Jonathan,
yeah,
the advantage of Piers Morgan is he has his fingers on the pulse of what is driving traffic. And therefore, when you're on Piers, everyone's watching because you're getting blasted with the exact same questions and insane tirades that people around the world are asking kids on campus. And people want to understand, what are the answers to that? And can you stand up to the pressure and not lose your stuff? And I think for that, it's very effective. And just, what's changed Piers? Is it Israel that's changed Piers? It's part of a deeper question, which is, I don't think it's about Piers. I think if Israel was doing what Israel needed to do, absolutely, and cared much less about Piers Morgan and the Piers Morgans of the world, they would have a lot less to say about what we're doing. It's exactly the opposite. And I say it as a military spokesman. I love my department and my commanders, and we're all under certain guidelines. But Israel is caught in a vicious cycle of answering the questions of our enemies and not stating our own truths. And the more we state our own truths, and again, Shabbos is a great example of a person who does this. If you state your own truths, we may be able to actually tilt somewhat in the Israel direction, but neither the foreign ministry nor really the IDF, which is very, very constrained, does a great job within those constraints, has been overly successful in doing it.
Very good point. I want to just, before Shabbos, you answer, when you talk about speaking about with Piers about his positions, are you talking about on air in the midst of these conversations, or have you had some offline conversations with him as well?
My offline with him has been very short. I've asked recently to go on air with him one-on-one, and we'll see if that comes in, because I feel like he cannot, his platform is so big. He's done a great job at kind of hiding behind a lot of the, the virulent, toxic opponents that he has to Israel's existence and many other things. And we haven't really gotten his views. My last interview with him, I very squarely focused on his views, and I think it was very productive. I heard it a lot. I heard it from a lot of people, but we need to draw out more from Pierce. Where does Pierce stand? I think we need to draw him out.
You know what I didn't do, and I will do this in the show notes for the recording. If you'll share with me, both of you, the links, edited or not, for where you've appeared, I think it's worthwhile. I know some people are following now who haven't been paying so much attention and maybe don't know who Pierce Morgan is or how influential he is. So let's put those, I'll put those in. Shabbos, how about you? What's your sense? I love what Doron said, but are we Israel responsible for Pierce's flip? Is that something that's changed, or is there something that's inbred? And maybe you can expand on any one-on-one conversations or things you've done on air as well.
Well, let me compliment what Doron said, which is Pierce Morgan has 9 million followers on Twitter. He has 4 million YouTube subscribers. Pierce Morgan Uncensored as a channel on Twitter has a million subscribers. So whether he is or isn't anti-Semitic, and I'm of the belief he isn't, I don't think there's strong enough evidence to support the position that he is anti-Semitic. It's sort of irrelevant because that is where decisions are being made, ideologies are being formed. And I am telling you as fact, young people are listening to Pierce Morgan in a way that they are not listening to CNN or Fox News or MSNBC or anyone from the Israeli army or anyone from the spokesperson unit. They're listening to Piers Morgan for a 30-second soundbite. That is simply how young people receive their information. And it is a lot better for people like Doron or Alon Levy, or I hope Shai Davidi will one day go on. It's much better for them to be on the show than not having those people. And at worst, I'll just call a spade, having individuals like Shmuley Boteach or Daniela Weiss making the case on Piers Morgan, who are not effective spokesmen for the cause, and let's call a spade, actually are detrimental to the cause, in my opinion. In terms of the specifics of the question, I would say this. Whether Israel is or isn't helping its own cause, there will always be those who denigrate, humiliate, and scorn the state of Israel, and by extension, the Jewish people. The book of Deuteronomy is very clear that as long as we are in exile, we don't have the third temple rebuilt in Jerusalem, the Jewish people will always be scattered, they will always be small, and they will always be oppressed. So 80 years ago, it was the Nazis, 60 years ago, it was the Stalinists, and the contemporary manifestations of that biblical prophecy are the campus activists, are the bad faith actors on Piers Morgan. And I'll tell you a funny anecdote. When Russia invaded Ukraine in February of 2022, I went to Ukraine to volunteer, and I met with a Irish soldier fighting in the Ukrainian Foreign Legion. And he told me, "We're so lucky, of all the enemies Ukraine could have had, we're so lucky that Ukraine has Russia as its enemy." And I never really understood what he meant. And he said, "Yeah, because Russia is so militaristically challenged. They have such bad leadership that what was meant to have taken them 3 days to take Kiev has now taken them 3.5 years. So we're so lucky, of all the nations to attack, it was Russia." And in a similar way, I feel that of all of the people in the 21st century to be our ideological adversaries, we're so fortunate that those who seek to denigrate and scorn Israel are, you know, pink-haired, nose-ringed communists at Yale University. What a delight, what an opportunity it is that of all of our enemies throughout our 3,000-year-old history, these are our contemporary manifestations of our ideological adversaries. So it is a challenge we are more than able to overcome, and I think that starts with having effective spokesmen for the cause on shows like Piers Morgan. I don't mean me, but I mean people like Doron. And I'll make one last note, which is to say this. The Israel Foreign Ministry flew a bunch of, I'm not an influencer, I don't use that term, but they flew a bunch of American influencers, and for whatever reason, I was invited to Israel a couple of months ago. And we met with the foreign minister, Gideon Sa'ar, around, you know, very long table, and the collective amount of followers of those American influencers were in the tens of millions, so pretty significant. And the essential point of the meeting was to underscore how the foreign minister, and by extension, the Israeli government, does not know how to effectively tell the story of Israel to a Western audience. That should not come as a shock to either of you or to your audience. That has sort of been the stereotype for decades now, that Israel is a startup nation. They're innovative, they're creative, but they're really bad at the PR war. And I believe that one of the ways that we can do better is not only going on shows like Piers Morgan, but stop as a natural defense, calling any policy critique we don't like anti-Semitic. And I don't remember her name, but the Minister of Social Equity, I might be confusing this, or gender equality, which I did not know was a ministry, but I guess when you have 35 ministers, anything works. But she was on shortly after, or shortly before I was on. Again, I don't remember her name, so I apologize. And it was a disastrous interview. Forget about the fact that her English skills were quite limited. Every single question that Piers asked, whether it was in good faith or not, was met by, this is anti-Semitic, this is anti-Semitic, and what about October 7th? Which, you know, we as Jews might be sympathetic to, but that's just not how you win an argument anymore. Whether Piers is or isn't anti-Semitic, and I don't think he is, it's irrelevant. His ideas and his policies and his ideology is just bad. It's wrong. And I think that would be a more effective strategy, to talk about why his ideas are wrong rather than going to our natural defenses of, this is anti-Semitic. So that's my...
I'm glad that you brought up some specific names. I can picture that interview as well. They seem to pop up. I don't go searching for Pierce's conversations, but they pop up. I guess that's the algorithm that once you begin watching a car wreck, they keep showing you more car wrecks. So it was that. I would add even the Israeli ambassador to the UK, Tzipi Hotovelli, didn't serve very well. Amichai Chilki, our ambassador of diaspora affairs, didn't do such a great job. And the irony is, you two, Shabbos, you know, you're underestimating yourself because you're very modest, but you're both very intelligent, articulate spokespeople. And the actual, well, I mean, Doron, you're in reserves and a spokesman for the army when they call you into that position, but you're a private citizen too. And you're both much more effective than the people who we've appointed and have had as ambassadors and elected and positions. So as you're both speaking, I'm thinking, my goodness, Doron, what you just said, if you could have an hour, even half an hour with Pierce one-on-one, contentious, yes, but listen to him and him listen to you and pick apart his arguments, if you will, I think that'd be also super effective. Now, but my question is, as a follow-up, is he, okay, my first question was, is it Israel's fault that he's flipped to any degree? Now, perhaps the opposite side, is he influenceable? Is he somebody who actually, even if he's looking for clicks, even if he's a showman, is he listening to facts? Does he understand facts? I know he doesn't understand the history terribly well. It always entertains me when you have a British speaker talking about Palestine and forgetting the fact that my father was a Palestinian Jew, according to the British, who spoke with the same accent that Piers Morgan does, that they simply don't know the history or don't care about the history. Can you have a one-on-one conversation with him and make any impact, do you think, Doron?
Look, I think in the last interview that I did with him, when I began to splice apart, how can you possibly say consistently that you condemn anyone who denies October 7th? And I said, do you still deny it? And of course, he said, of course I deny. And he went into this long tirade. And I said, but you're willing to keep the very same people that carried out October 7th in power. That is your constant approach. And he tried to answer that question. He had a lot of trouble doing so. Can he be influenced? I think we have to try. I think that anyone on some level, I believe everybody has a heart deep inside. Certainly Piers Morgan, who ironically is conservative, right? I mean, we're not talking about a liberal, which is why this is so fascinating. I mean, Piers Morgan has a lot of respect for Donald Trump. He has a lot of respect for, on a certain level, of British history. And the irony is, and this is really what I think needs to be pulled out of him, is that if we switch places and he's sitting where we are, and it's 1945, and the British are bombing Dresden, and somebody starts asking him the same questions that he's asking us, what would his answer be? And here, Jonathan, is where I think that we have failed. Because if the British are bombing Dresden, they know that they are bombing Dresden in order to kill the Nazis, and they have absolutely no qualms about doing so. It costs an enormous amount of human life, but they're so committed to their mission, and they see themselves as a regional power. Like when Shabbos was saying in Deuteronomy, if the Jews build the temple, then until we build the temple, we're living in this ghetto mentality. Well, while we're on the way to build the temple, we have got to realize our regional position in the Middle East, and that Israel is a grown country with the very right to defend ourselves and to stop apologizing. The dissonance between our people who are fighting like warriors and our communication, which is embarrassed by that fact and does not go back to the very basis, which is why I wrote this book, is to go back to the basis. That dissonance leaves an opening for people to come and attack you. And if Israel just, we need to answer less questions. I can go into enormous detail about how our foreign ministry and the IDF, which I love, are built around answering questions of our enemies. Hundreds of people are sitting there answering questions every day about where every bullet was shot and where every bomb fell. And to go back to our root, that we are the indigenous people to this land. We were attacked. We will finish this job completely and do our best to protect the civilians that voted for the enemy. That's it. Repeat, repeat, repeat. Go back to our core and stop apologizing. And I think if we were to do that, there would be less opening for somebody like Pierce and all the other people to try to drive a wedge. But until we have this temple mentality, I will take this from Chavez, the third temple mentality, call it, of an independent indigenous nation having returned to their land, we're going to continually face these questions.
This year, you can join Christian leaders from around the world who are lining up to participate in Root and Branch, the newest hands-on, meaningful, and incredibly tangible way for Christians to make a personal connection to Israel, the Israeli people, and to be a blessing to the people and nation which is still suffering from the trauma of a horrific terrorist attack and war. Root and Branch offers unique comfort and a vision of peace, with tangible material benefits to Israelis who have suffered the trauma of war, specifically in and around the Gaza border area. Root and Branch is a unique agricultural pilgrimage. You will harvest wild olive trees in communities along the Gaza border that were devastated by the October 7, 2023 terrorist attack and massacre. In these communities and elsewhere, we will plant deep and lasting roots among Israelis of all backgrounds, making Root and Branch all the more innovative. Since the war began, more than $50 million in crops have been saved by volunteers. Root and Branch is the first such initiative to harvest olives. Proceeds from the olive oil that's being made will directly benefit these devastated communities, making Root and Branch a critical and significant project to bless Israel economically and spiritually in multiple ways. Root and Branch is a partnership between the Genesis 123 Foundation and NewPersia.org. For information, videos, and media about the experience, dates, pricing, and how you can register, please visit rootandbranchisrael.com.
Thank you. Chavez, you've been on three times. He's not stupid. Is he influenceable, or it doesn't matter?
Well, it's interesting that Garon brings up the example of Dresden, because that's actually something I said on the show. I said, you know, it's pretty ironic for a British person to be accusing Israel of indiscriminately targeting civilians, because you don't exactly have a great track record yourself. And when I mentioned that point, he simply said, well, that's apples and oranges, because that was a world war, which is true. It's not the exact same type of war. One is more localized. But the point still stands that one of the consequences of war, and this is true of every war ever fought in modern warfare, is civilians are killed. I mean, point to another war where you would not have innocent civilians being killed and gunned. And it's bad. I'm not excusing it. It simply means that it was a tremendous military failure and miscalculation of Hamas, which is the government in charge of their people, to raid and rape and kidnap on October 7th. And I made this point on campus, and I try to make this point on national media, not just with peers, but really any news outlet that will have me on, is if you truly believe that there's a genocide, if you truly believe that women and children are being indiscriminately bombed and killed, and in some cases the accusations are they're being raped.
Well, deliberately think, also, that's part of the element.
Deliberately, excuse right. me, exactly. If you truly believe that that's the case, then you would do everything in your power to ensure that we apply the exact same foreign policy on Gaza as we have with any other country that has been facing a genocide, which is you would safely evacuate that population right. into humanitarian corridors into Egypt. And every time I brought this position up on Piers Morgan, I'm either shouted down by him or by his guests of
right,
saying
because that's ethnic cleansing. You're either killing the right.
It's a total catch 22, because if you believe that there's a genocide, okay, let's safely evacuate them. Oh, we can't, because that would be ethnic cleansing. Can you imagine if the Jews in the 1930s and 40s in Poland were told, look, we believe you're experiencing a genocide. We believe you're going to be shipped off to the death pits or to the gas chambers. We wish we could help you, but we just can't, because we know that if we were to safely evacuate you to Australia or the United Kingdom or to the United States, that would constitute ethnic cleansing. So much better you stay in Poland and die. I mean, what a bizarre argument. But as always, with the Palestinian exception, we have just normalized that that's like a routine normal thing to say when it comes to foreign policy. The second point I wanted to mention is I try in terms of debate, and to brag for a second, I was captain of my high school debate team, so this has adequately prepared me. I try to agree with the opposition as much as possible. So again, this worked really well on campus. When you have the encampment leaders living in the Harvard Hamas homeless shelters, and they're calling for an intifada, and they're following Jews on their way to class, and they're, you know, doing their Free Palestine from the River to the Sea, I would try to agree with them on diagnosing the problem. So I would say, I agree. And this is where I'm still a bit of a liberal. Palestinians should have self-determination. They should have the freedom of expression. They should have their own state. I agree with you. The problem is, and where we differ tremendously, is the solutions or the conclusion as to what to do about the problem that we both diagnosed, which is your solution is have a Judenrein, river to the sea, one Arab state. And again, they will say this explicitly, Mina maya limaye Palestina rabiye. They yell this to me in the Harvard cafeteria, from water to water, Palestine will be Arab. Their solution is one ethnically homogenous state, the state of Palestine, where all the Jews go to the river or the sea. My solution is, well, why don't we kill the terrorists in charge of Gaza who have taken away any ability for the Palestinians to have that freedom of movement, that freedom of expression, that peace between two people? So I try to agree with the opposition as much as possible. It sort of defangs them. They're sort of taken aback when they realize that I'm not this genocidal maniac that they concoct I must be. But again, where I disagree and where my principles are unmoving is what the solution is about it. And the last thing I want to say, because I realize I didn't properly respond to the first question, which is this. Every time, and again, I'm relatively young, so my perspective on this is might be somewhat elementary, but every time Israel is faced with unvarnished naked terror, whether it's October 7th, whether it was the second intifada, whether it was the knife intifada, where I was actually living in Jerusalem at the time, every time that happens, there's sort of like this imaginary clock that begins counting down. Whether it's 3 months, whether it's 30 days, whether it's a week, Israel has international sympathy. And they could sort of do, I don't want to say whatever they want, but they have a lot more leeway into their response within that countdown than they do after that countdown. And after October 7th, when you had the Eiffel Tower in blue and white, and you had Democrats and Republicans by and large overwhelmingly supporting Israel, Israel had whatever that time was, significant amount of time to do what they felt was in the best interest of their Muslim, Jewish, and Christian population in the state of Israel. And it is so obvious that that time has run out, and it has run out many, many months ago. And I don't know, because I'm not a military expert, and I'm not in politics, and I'm not in the Army spokesman unit. But all I know is if Israel is trying to conduct the war so that Western audiences favor Israel, they will never successfully be able to conduct this war. They just can't. I'm not a fan of Merrick Kahana. I detest the JDL and his values. Having said that, there is a great line that I think happens to be attributed to him, where he says, I much prefer an Israel hated by the world than an Auschwitz loved by it. And that has influenced my political trajectory. It's one of the reasons I supported Donald Trump, even though I disagree with about 80% of his issues. And I think that's how Israel and the adults in the room should probably see themselves. Stop trying to win over favor. Because honestly, Israel will be respected when Israel respects itself, as opposed to Israel trying to curry favor with Western audiences and the TikTok generation, because they're not going to like you, irrespective of whether you have a humanitarian quarter or whether you're coordinating with Reverend Johnny Moore and the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. They're just not going to like you. So rather than cater this war to a Western audience, cater this war to the betterment of your population, of the Muslims, Jews, and Christians who depend on a strong and secure state of Israel.
Well said. I want to ask you, there's so much to follow up on, but talking about what you said before, agreeing with people with whom you're debating or confronting. I haven't studied it. Didn't watch probably all of your appearances on Pierce's program. But does that work? on his. I think you were part of one of the panels that, in my recollection, was probably one of the most hostile, or at least brawls. Is it effective at all to try to get your voice in to agree? Do you agree? Does it work? And by the way, parenthetically, I'm curious. Do you typically know who you're going against when you go live, or you just are introduced and you've got three other people there? Shams?
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I'll tell you a funny anecdote. So I just moved to Los Angeles 4 weeks ago. That's why my shelf background is not nearly as impressive as Daron's. Although, Daron, I do have your book. It's in one of my boxes I've yet to unpack. So for all the audience listening, buy Daron's book. It's very good. So I started at PragerU. I'm a political commentator there. And literally my first day, as I'm walking into the office, within 5 minutes, they said there was a last minute cancellation and can you go on Piers Morgan? And within 5 minutes of walking into the PragerU building, wow, I was put into a studio. I knew that the debate was going to be Israel, but didn't really know the specifics. And I had no idea who the guests were going to be. Similarly, when I went on the second time, they told me who one of the guests was going to be. They didn't tell me in its entirety, but it was actually a pleasant surprise because one of my panelists or colleagues was Lieutenant Colonel Richard Kemp, who's actually a friend of mine. So I was texting him, oh, great, great to see you. So I didn't actually know who it was going to be, but I knew a general sense it was going to be on Israel. And then broadly, in terms of is that an effective argument? Look, when you are willing to when you're debating individuals who are willing to have a debate, yes. When you're debating individuals like Anna Kasparian, who was Cenk Uygur's co-panelist at the Young Turks, which, again, just tangentially, I was a bleeding heart socialist. You know, I voted for Bernie Sanders twice. I was 9 years old knocking on the doors for Barack Obama. I was at the 2016 Democratic Convention as a Bernie bro. And part of my political upbringing was watching Anna Kasparian and Cenk Uygur as the Young Turks. And I would actually admire them. So it was funny, before Anna actually opened her mouth and we were sort of sitting in the green room, I was thinking maybe I should say hi. And, you know, I may not agree with your politics anymore, but you were really a very influential part of my political upbringing. And then the moment she started talking, I realized, okay, I'm not saying this because she has so crossed any path of like normal political discourse. And when I tried making this point that I just mentioned earlier about humanitarian corridors, the moment I mentioned it, and this clip went a little viral on the alt-right neo-Nazi side of Twitter, of, you know, she shuts me down. You're just trying to use the Holocaust card anymore. It doesn't work. You know, we don't buy it. We see through it. The real Holocaust is happening now. And unfortunately, that was the clip that went viral. It was not the point I was trying to make. It was not the response I had. It was just that 30-second soundbite. And Anna, to her credit, knows how the game is played in a way that I'm still trying to figure out. She knows that no one's watching the full hour, hour and a half of the Piers Morgan Uncensored show. They're watching the 30-second soundbite. And she did that quite effectively. As I said, that 30-second clip of her calling out Zionist Shabbos Kestenbaum for using the Holocaust card, that did extraordinarily well. And that was a learning curve for me, that unfortunately, in a Piers Morgan setting, you're not going to have a 5-minute disquisition. You are not going to articulate all the points you want. You have a 30-second window before either he or the Anna Kasparian or whomever that is will shut you down. And again, that's just how the game is played. Whether that's good or bad, it's irrelevant because that is how the game is played. That's how young people are consuming information.
And unlike high school debate, where you know the topic and you know more or less who's going to be standing on the other side, if you're coming into the green room not knowing who's in the green room, much less on air, or how that conversation will devolve, yes, you are both very well knowledgeable and great speakers, but that's also, it's hard to come up with that 30-second.
And, you know, it's funny because with high school debate, they give you a trophy if you did well or not. So you could sort of quantitatively measure how well you did. Whereas, you know, Piers Morgan or Al Arabiya or Al Jazeera, all these other places I've been on, you don't really know until you look at like the Twitter analytics and you see if the neo-Nazis are reposting your video or not. So it's a very different type of measurement of success.
Got it. Daron, what's your you shook your head when I asked the question, if you know who you're going on against, so to speak.
No, I in fact, I do. He does provide the reason. I'll tell you why I shook my head. First of all, I have gotten a, similar to what Shabbos was saying, a name, a couple names of people that are going to be on. And then I've said people are dropping off. They'll bring in other people. Look, there's a specifically insidious side to, again, what Piers Morgan is doing because he's trying to drive ratings. And it's exactly what Shabbos said. He himself Pierce is incredibly effective at cutting 20 seconds of that entire hour. And when he puts it up, he tries to define the entire episode. And if I look at what's happening today in the kind of the pro-Israel battling world, it is trying to very quickly identify what Pierce is going to put up and putting up contra videos. That really is what this is. It's the after battle that takes place. So that, you know, he'll cut, Daron, you're an idiot. You know, that's all we'll get. And then somebody else like Eli David, who's got, you know, maybe close to a million followers, will put something else up to try to defend. It's that after battle that takes place. The other thing that Pierce will do, and this is what you cannot expect, this is why I shook my head, is because Pierce will tell you who's going to be on. But I had a particularly stormy debate with Cenk where he went off the rails, and I enjoyed watching him go absolutely off the rails. But then Pierce brings on Jeffrey Sachs, who summarizes the entire piece, and that you never know is going to happen, you know. And so if that's what they want to focus on, but this is the game, and both Shabbos and I know this, once you go into the ring, and this is the reality, and this is why it's so challenging and exciting and important, this is why people are watching. If you get kicked in the stomach, even if you go on to win most of the points and win a technical knockout, that kick in the stomach, which often happens, there's usually at least one in an hour, is what they're going to highlight. And so it's really intense to be on the show. And he'll always leave out at least a few people so that you don't know who's coming in. I'm sorry, if I could say one more thing. The other thing Pierce will do is he will give you the subject matter and they will give it to every single person. And when it comes to you, he has no problem changing the subject and just going back to the tirade and Gaza. That is his approach today.
Now, when you're speaking about coming to you, there are a few things that I'm paying attention to every word, and I'm not able to process 3 minutes ago to what you just said, but it appears, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're getting different treatment. He's doing this, or am I misinterpreting? Is he doing that? Is he throwing a curveball to the pro-Israel commentators, but not to the anti-Israel people? Or do you feel that might be happening as well?
It is the Pierce and Cenk show. There are a few people where when you go on, Pierce has his buddies, they echo him. He does not challenge them at all. He waits for them to explode. And the only time, look, he'll do a little bit of healthy pushback when it comes to things, when they step over the bounds, right? When they talk about the Holocaust and, you know, Shabbos, I don't know if it happened when I saw that episode, actually. She's bonkers. That woman that is with him, when they go anti-Semitic, when they talk Holocaust, when they do anything to offend kind of that Auschwitz kind of situation of the Jews, Pierce will then chime in because that's how he gains credibility, right? Pierce's credibility, again, I do not believe he's an anti-Semite, but as a person that's refereeing the UFC and has criticism of Israel, that his credibility comes from his ability to latch onto a few things. He's got Jewish friends, and he will say that frequently. I have Jewish friends. I'm not anti-Semite. I'm against October 7th. And, you know, and that those are his two main points that he tries to hang on to. But there's no question beyond that. If you're in the pro-Israel community, you're the target.
Okay.
That's what draws eyeballs.
So I'm glad at least for affirming that, because I have a bias, and I'll put that out there, but I'm attempting to be at least a little bit generous in saying I don't know, and that's what it appears. But you're affirming what we're seeing on the other end. I love that you said something about getting into the ring. A lot of times when I'm watching, Daron, I guess you and I are more or less the same age. Shabbos, we're not. But when I was a kid, I remember growing up in New Jersey, watching professional wrestling, and I feel like I'm there, and I feel like there's a not only there in this ridiculous show, but as you just said, vis-a-vis Cenk and others who he has on his show, who are there to echo one another, that it's this tag team, it's Andre the Giant versus four little people, and that's great for ratings. And it works, but it's not balanced at all, and it's not truly a debate, is it, Shabbos?
Yeah, I would agree. I think in theory, or at least on paper, the platform is a debate, but in practice, it never actually is because the ref, the moderator, Piers, is not doing a very good job at moderating and or refing. So the behind the scenes, you know, is he setting people up for failure? I don't think that's true, although, to be honest, I can only speculate because I just don't know. I'm very new to this. What I will say, though, it is very apparent once you're already on the show and there's no out, there is a double standard in which he treats pro-Israel panelist than anti-Israel panel. I mean, that's just obvious. I don't remember his name, but if you watch my first episode, we're all the way to the end of the episode because he basically has a 40 minute interview with, again, I'm forgetting his name, but he's a Palestinian. He's a British Palestinian. He wants to build a hospital in Gaza. And he's a great guy and
a doctor,
power to him. But it's a 40 minute interview. Zero interruptions, zero gotcha moments, zero hard-hitting questions. It was a lot of, how does that make you feel? What motivated you to do this? What would you say? You know, very, very soft, very nice interview. And again, I'm in the green room, so I'm kind of just watching this. And then once that interview ends, then we're on the panel, and all of a sudden it's, you know, how can you say there's no genocide? And then as you're trying to explain, all of a sudden he cuts you off and then moves on, you know, to Cenk Uygur. So there's a very obvious double standard, and it's very frustrating. But as I said, good or bad, frustrating or not, it's just how the game is played. And so even though we're using this session to sort of voice our grievances, at the end of the day, it's a big honor and responsibility to go on Piers Morgan. And I will keep going on so long as they have me, because this is where the battle is. I cannot fight in the battlegrounds of Gaza or Yemen or Lebanon or Iran. You know, the IDF does not want me, trust me. But what I can do is I can fight in the battleground of ideas. I can fight in the court of law and, you know, in the courts. I could also fight in the court of public opinion, and I could fight in media and social media. And that's a fight that not only can I contribute to, but really all of your listeners in whatever capacity, utilizing whatever talents they have, can and should and must join us in that fight. Because it's true, not many people will be able to go on the Piers Morgan show, but everyone has the access and the ability to open a social media account and to write the truth. And I can't guarantee it'll go viral. I can't guarantee it'll be picked up, but maybe it will.
Friends, Israel's at war, and the war may get worse before it gets better. Much worse. It's going to be a long war because the enemy is the epitome of evil. It's not just a matter of overcoming troops on a battlefield, but overcoming a theology, an ideology, an evil one. While the Genesis 123 Foundation has been overwhelmed with the support of so many donations to the Israel Emergency Campaign, there's so much more that needs to be done. We've invested your donations that we've received so far strategically to make the biggest impact possible, whether helping with soldiers and their equipment and personal needs, to providing civilian security for outlying border communities, to relocating and settling several families from near the Gaza war zone, launching the global petition drive to support Israel in the face of pressure for a ceasefire, and long-term needs for at-risk children, traumatized now more than ever before. Please take a moment to pause this conversation right now and go to love.genesis123.co and donate generously. We value your trust, and we will keep all donors informed about how and where your donations are being used to contribute to make the biggest impact possible. And when you use that link, love.genesis123.co, you can also send your prayers and words of encouragement to Israelis of all backgrounds. Just sending your love, something that we need so desperately. Thank you, and God bless you and your loved ones.
I'll say a line that I think is very profound and really good, and I want a high schooler to use it as their yearbook quote one day. But often when I say it, people say, yeah, that's obvious. It's not smart at all. But the line is, if you do nothing, nothing will change, right? The status quo will continue, or really, if anything, it will get worse as it pertains to Israel. But if you do something, I can't guarantee the outcome, but I can guarantee that something will change, whether it means you will go viral and you'll go on Piers Morgan, or one person sees that. But your ability to impact change in the advent and the age of social media cannot be underestimated. And, you know, I'll be a little honest. I'm not particularly intelligent or articulate or wise, but I was helped by the fact that I happened to have been at Harvard during October 7th. And Congress and the media, they're very infatuated with the idea of Harvard. So I was helped by the fact that even though I'm not so intelligent, I happened to go to a school where the media is really interested in, and that definitely helped my cause. So for sure. But at the same time, I did not know when I first started speaking out on social media, when I first started going to Congress, I did not know what the outcome would be. I would not never have surmised that I would be on Fox News or Piers Morgan or testifying in front of Congress or getting involved with the Trump campaign. I just spoke out because I wanted people to know my story, and I wanted to, really for my own benefit, I wanted to put my story out there and talk about Israel in a way that was the Israel I knew. And lo and behold, I guess people were interested because then I was invited to the Piers Morgan and the Congress and all that stuff. But that's not why I did it to begin with. And I think that's the underlying message when I speak on college campuses, when I speak to high schoolers. This is always what I say, is we do not have the luxury of waiting for the adults in the room to sort of figure it out. There's no master plan or master strategy that the foreign ministry is going to come up with. And if we just do that thing, we'll be good. So because we don't have that luxury, we need all hands on deck. And my capacity, my place is Piers Morgan and the national media and Congress. And for other people, it can be other things. It can be writing an op-ed. It can be writing on Twitter. It can be organizing a local march for the hostages on Sunday. So whatever that particular thing is, people need to get involved.
Great. Thank you. Jerome, before I move on, anything you want to just respond? That was a lot and very good.
I love what Chavez said, and I think that it very much connects to, because I always have a debate if I go on, and I don't always go on. I've been invited and not gone on numerous times, either because of scheduling or various other reasons. But I think what Chavez is saying, at least from my perspective, the main reason that I go on is because the Jews of the world are feeling beaten down, meaning the terrorism that is being destroyed in Gaza is being incredibly successful around the world, as we know, right? Terrorism strikes fear into the heart of a person, causes them to freeze, has drawn a line in the sand for better or for worse. And I'd be curious to have a conversation with Chavez and you about this at some point, where a Jew kind of has to decide if they're going to go underground or above ground, something that, you know, maybe had this not happened, that line wouldn't have been drawn and all of our brothers and sisters, many of them would have faded away. But what I feel like going on Piers Morgan does is it inspires people to stand up and again get in the ring. And that in itself, whether you win, whether you lose, the fact that you're willing to get in there, these people cannot hurt you. You can say the best thing that you can say, and it usually makes sense. And there are people out there who are listening. That is an incredibly important message. And we know that Piers Morgan is probably the number one platform for doing this. That is where people are watching, like Chavez said at the beginning. And just standing up inspires other people to stand up. So that is also my main motivation.
Great. Thank you for that. I just want to highlight a point and redirect. It's important that you mention it in terms of how Jews are feeling and Jews standing up. But we, as a Genesis 123 Foundation and this program, Inspiration from Zion specifically, are here to build bridges between Jews and Christians. And I think not without doing a actual check theologically, but I think most of the people following live right now and who will continue to watch this are Christians who care deeply. And it's important. It's great to hear what you both say as Jews, and give kind of a different window to look through how these conversations impact us as a people. But let's also remember that there are some really, really good speakers that Piers has on who are 100% on our side, solid Christians, as well as the people following. And I just wanted to highlight that. I'd like to flip to somebody who Piers Morgan references probably more than he has on, who's Ehud Olmert, the former prime minister. Mm-hmm. Ehud Olmert's been on a couple of times. He said some things that appear to give that Piers agrees with, that give fuel to the flames of Piers talking about genocide and ethnic cleansing and war crimes. I mean, maybe from everything you both said already, the answer is intuitive. But when he's doing that, of course, he's not having a former prime minister be part of a panel or a debate. He's doing a one-on-one, and it's softball. Can you, based on your experience or your intuition, Can you unpack any of that? Why Ehud Olmert seems to have found his virtual home away from home on Piers Morgan's program?
I'd like to take a jab at that, if I may. I know Ehud personally and spent time with him before he was indicted and found guilty. As my role in the City of David, he was mayor of Jerusalem for part of that time. Afterwards, he was prime minister. This is a typical example of a person that has zero influence in Israel. He is not only a has-been, he's the worst has-been because he's a convicted criminal. Right. And no one takes him seriously at all in Israel. And all it took for Ehud Olmert to resurrect himself in the eyes of the world was to speak poorly about Israel. And you see this happening with former generals who become incredibly irrelevant. All you have to do if you want to make headlines and find a crowd of people who will beg you to come on TV is either to be a prime minister or have that word general in front of your name and be critical of Israel. And the world media gobbles you up in the same way that in the United States, they try to tilt the media by representing certain people that do not represent the whole. Anti-Israel Israelis or critical Israelis are the stars of the major media, and that includes Piers Morgan. When I went on, it was with Gidon Levy. Now, I don't know if you know who Gidon Levy is, but you probably do. Gidon Levy it's a farce. It's common.
Gidon Levy has always been, and he was never prime minister. Gidon Levy is a columnist with Haaretz who justified the terrorism against Jews in Judea and Samaria and some other really ridiculous and dangerous statements. But he was never prime minister and doesn't have a need to rehabilitate himself because that's always who he's been.
That's true. But where he's able to be used by someone like Pierce is it's typical media, right? This is what Chavez and I are fighting against in the world is when you go, you have a good Israeli or a good Jew who's anti-Israel out there that is battling you and is trying to tilt the scene that way. Gidon Levy is how Israelis actually feel. Doron Spielman and Chavez are the ones who are marginalized. And you know, this is a common approach. And this is where Ehud Olmert has really, this was his texture. This is where he fits in. Previously, he was right wing. I will say that Ehud Olmert, if it was not for Ehud Olmert, Hamas would not have risen to power in Gaza. Let's not forget that it was Ehud Olmert who was prime minister in 2007, that when Hamas took power, he decided to do absolutely nothing, pull out of Gaza. That was it. He moved Israeli troops farther and farther out of Gaza, and that was it. The Shin Bet was seriously weakened, and it's very much to his responsibility that Hamas was not stopped and that it was simply encouraged and went on and on and on. So that happened under his watch.
Thank you. Shabbos, anything about Ehud Olmert or Gidon Levy?
I love a good Ehud Olmert bashing. That was great. You took the words out of my mouth. I will say a generalized point, but before I do, I want to harken back to what you said, Jonathan, because it's so important. I was on a podcast a few days ago, and I was asked by Rabbi Mark Wilds of MJE, you know, we often talk about anti-Semitism and anti-Semites. Who are the friends of the Jewish people? And without hesitation, I said, Christians, Christians, Christians.
Yes.
You know, we cannot thank the American Christian, the Christian global community enough. I just spoke at KUFA, the Christians United for Israel. I mean, talk about feeling like a rock star. You walk around wearing one of these, you know, people are asking for your picture. The love and the real blessings are so felt. I spoke at I had the main plenary, but I also spoke to the high schoolers and the KUFI on campus, and you know, I have young people coming up to me saying, you know, we're praying for our hostages, we're praying for the Jewish
yes.
people. Just like wow. And I'll tell you one last anecdote. I posted this on my Twitter. I go to a lot of Jewish conferences, and it's not always a given there's going to be kosher food at these conferences, which is a problem right. for a time. At KUFI, this is my second year, every time I go, there's a gift basket waiting for me in my hotel room, not only of exclusively kosher food, this is July, exclusively kosher for Passover food, you know, with a handwritten note saying, you know, we support the Jewish people. So from the bottom of my heart and from the bottom of so many people's hearts to the Christian community, thank you, thank you, thank you. In terms of Ehud Olmert and Gidon Levy, I don't want to always, you know, be the Harvard guy and talk about Harvard, but it happens to be a really good example. I study religion at Harvard, or I studied past tense. I graduated, and I did not go to Harvard to sue them. I went because I wanted to explore theological perspectives that I otherwise would not be exposed to. And if you were in a vacuum and you did not have the personal upbringing or the lived experiences that I did, living in Israel, coming from an Orthodox family, you would think Israel has only one newspaper called Haaretz. Israel only had one prime minister named Ehud Olmert. I mean, it's a joke. The Western audience or the Western media likes to have internal foils. So if you're a former socialist who loves Trump, they'll beg you to go on. If you're an African-American who hates Black Lives Matter, they'll beg you to go on. And if you are an Israeli who believes that Israel is intentionally starving Gazan children and that children are committing a genocide, they will beg you to go on. And the problem with this, among many, many problems, is it tries to paint, as Daron just said, it tries to paint the marginalized opinion, the opinion on the fringes, as the mainstream narrative. And it's simply not true. And we see bad faith actors like Ehud Olmert who realize that there can be a tremendous level of fame and attention and money and power by being the token Jew. And again, I'll make one broad point is a dirty secret that we don't often talk about in the American Jewish community is of the people who were following me on my way to class during the encampments, the people calling for an intifada, the people who signed a letter on October 7th blaming Jews for October 7th. A lot of those people were Jewish. Zev is Jewish, Hannah's Jewish, Scott's Jewish, Michelle's Jewish. These are Jews who I sat in classes with. In many cases, I learned from them. And the argument, well, I am parenthetically or incidentally Jewish, and therefore it cannot be anti-Semitic. You can look at the Hebrew Bible itself. We have always had the mixed multitude. We have always had Jews who have the worst intentions at heart, and they hide behind their Judaism. You can look at the Hebrew Bible, story after story of this. Or more recently, you can look at the Association of National German Jews, which was the Jewish division of the Nazi Party. So simply saying, I am Jewish, and therefore it cannot be anti-Semitic, is one of the oldest play in the playbook, and historically and biblically it's just wrong. Zohar Mamdani's doing it now in New York City as well. It's pathetic. It is a whitewash of true anti-Semitism, and politically it's just not an effective argument.
Wow, you know, there's so much. I'm so grateful that the two of you are here. Really fabulous conversation. And I wrote down a number of other points that I wanted to go through. We're going to be respectful for the time, and I always like to leave people wanting more, and maybe we will do more. But I'd like to begin to wrap up before I call up Jen Mallon, who's going to close in prayer, and kind of like a rapid fire round robin. When you're on Piers Morgan, you do sometimes get a minute or two, but rarely without being interrupted, sometimes shouted down. And there are some basic questions that I find that Piers constantly is asking. It's repeated, it's rhetorical, and when people attempt to answer, they don't typically get to make their case. So I just want to go through a couple of them and ask you, as if we're sitting on Piers, to answer, and maybe Piers or people who are following. The first being, Piers always is complaining about the fact that international journalists are not allowed into Gaza, and how should we believe the Israeli media that's present. How would either of you respond to Piers on the program on that point? Daron, you're a military spokesman.
I've responded to this numerous times, and he's right. We're not going to allow foreign press in Gaza. Right now, we're trying to destroy Hamas with Gazans running around. Can we imagine what would happen? This is what I said. If there were press running around, and what Piers's answer is, well, no, that's our problem. No, it isn't your problem, because when you constantly repeat that more press journalists have been killed in Gaza than any other conflict in the world, you there are referring, who are these press journalists? They are Hamas members that strap TV on their back. Can you imagine what would happen if there's an AP journalist in an area that we want to strike? I'm sorry. We praise our actions in finishing Hamas much more than your journalism. This has to be completely unapologetic. We are here to win a war. Whether it makes headlines or not, we are going to win this war, protect our people. At the end of the day, that will protect the people of Gaza, and you'll be writing about it in 10 years. You just don't see it now.
Shabbos, do you add to that? But I'm wondering if either of you think if Piers were to be helicoptered into Gaza, would anything change his perspective?
That I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not in his mind. I can't speculate, possibly, because I do think he is a more well-reasoned individual that we give him credit for. Does he play into the views and the ratings? Yeah, 100%. But I do think, as Daron mentioned, he is a conservative. You know, he's someone who supported Donald Trump. He's historically been fairly pro-Israel. But in terms of the first point, I would agree with everything Daron just said. If the argument today is that Israel is indiscriminately killing journalists and they're indiscriminately killing women and children, then all of a sudden, if we were to have foreign press in there, and because it's an active war zone in one of the most dense urban jungles on planet Earth, and inevitably a journalist is killed, then, you know, the story writes itself. Israel is once again targeting journalists because they don't want the truth going out. So it's just not a risk worth taking on. And the second point, and I think this was a problem more in Lebanon, but Daron, you're the military expert, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. If you do have foreign press there, they are of the understanding that the stories that they are going to write have to be from the perspective of Hamas or Hezbollah or whoever the governing force is, because otherwise we're not letting you out of here. You know, you are writing a story from Hamas's perspective. You're not writing a story that is critical of us. You're not going to write a story that is objective, but it's going to be from our perspective. So to me, this is also it's a no-brainer.
I want to add to something Shabbos just said, and this is I won't speak about the outlet or even where I took them. But it's a known thing that when we take journalists and we embed them with us, they are afraid to speak because they know that they have other journalists in certain places on the other side, not in Gaza, but in other conflicts that are sitting in capitals. And if they, even when they're with us, and they've said this to me, if they report what they see, which obviously when they see it, they realize we're not killing people, slaughtering them and raping them, and that we're a moral army, they're afraid of the welfare of their other outlets that are sitting in capitals around the Middle East. You don't win either way at the end of the day.
Okay, good. Genocide, Pierce doesn't overtly say that we're committing genocide or war crimes, but he gets awful close to the line. He says, intend to commit genocide or possible genocide and ethnic cleansing and war crimes. Help people who are following, while I think all of us, the three of us and many followers, live and breathe and sleep that, debunk. Why is there no genocide, ethnic cleansing, and war crimes?
Well, Daron, if you want to go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, I want you to hit it, Shabbos.
If our modern sensibilities have totally distinguished any separation between war and genocide. So now anything that I find upsetting on the nightly news is automatically a genocide. If you were going to say that Israel is committing a genocide, you have to define what a genocide is. And I have tried going to our ideological adversaries and asking that very question. What is the definition of a genocide? And all they will point to is dead civilians, which, again, is horrific and a tragedy, but that is not dissimilar from any other war fought in modern warfare. If you want to say there's a genocide, how come there have been more babies born in Gaza post October 7th than civilians being killed? How come there's actually more aid going into Gaza than pre-October 7th? If Israel's committing a genocide, they are doing a very crappy job at that. I was at the Kerem Shalom border crossing a few months ago. I saw with my own eyes the humanitarian aid trucks entering Gaza on a daily basis of feminine hygiene products and baby formula and clothing and medicine. And that is super, super controversial within Israeli society. If we're committing a genocide, why are we aiding? Why are we abetting an enemy populace? The reality is Israel has actually taken more precautions. It has created such a high standard that even John Spencer has said it will be incredibly difficult for any other Western country in the future to wage a war and to follow this standard that Israel has set, with one of the lowest combatant to civilian ratios in modern warfare. So if they're committing a genocide, all I ask is show me the proof and show me the evidence. And dead civilians, although it is a tragedy and horrific, is not evidence of that. It is simply evidence of Hamas's tremendous miscalculation on October 7th.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel, and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance, creating an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anyone for any occasion, and most of all to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit IsraelTheMiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
Well said. Daron, anything you want to add about the genocide, ethnic cleansing, and war crime?
I would add one other thing, because Shabbos said it so well. Again, it's almost as uncomfortable as talking about anti-Semitic Jews on campus, which is that the Gazan people essentially set up this mess that we're looking at when they voted for Hamas, when they watched them. I've been in their homes, next to the kids' window, in every single building is where the tunnels are located under the ground. When they saw their kids and their fathers recruited into Hamas, they enabled them to be ideologically completely indoctrinated in Gaza. And what did they think was going to happen when they came out to fight Israel? Did they think that we're not going to go after Hamas? They willingly put themselves up in the situation. It's not genocide, but as absolutely horribly unfortunate it is that there are civilians that are dying, that's the same reason why German civilians died, because they put the Nazis in power. If you want to avoid those types of casualties, don't sit around for 20 years while the infrastructure of evil that is being built to destroy, rape, and kill a country right next door is being built under your doorstep. And so even those civilian deaths, which are extremely regrettable, are on really the responsibility, it's horrible for us to say, is on the shoulders of every Gazan who allowed a tunnel to be built underneath their home. We don't like talking about it. We don't like saying it, but it's the truth.
So maybe it's redundant, but then the next point I wanted to raise is in terms of Pierce, and it's not only Pierce, representing the numbers of casualties according to the Gaza Health Ministry, which is Hamas. And he'll constantly, 20,000, 30, whatever number he's coming up with, there's no documentation of it. So my question is, why would he represent that the numbers reported by Hamas are accurate? And yet he'll say that he frequently will say to people who are talking about how we know how many terrorists are killed, but how come we don't know how many civilians are killed? You want to jump into that, Daron, picking up on what you just said?
Look, I said to Pierce directly, I said that on October 4th, 2024, it said that 10,500 women had been killed. On October 6th, if I'm getting the months correctly, you can find all this online. The number went down by half, meaning either half of the amount of women were resurrected from the dead or Hamas was lying in the first place. And Pierce's constant regurgitation of these numbers does one thing. It puts pressure on Israel and the international community to allow Hamas to stay in power in Gaza. And I go back to the same point. Do you want us to leave Hamas in power in Gaza? Because you are repeating their propaganda, and that is what you are saying every time you repeat these numbers. By the way, this is now, of the last 2 weeks, has now been transformed, and now the numbers that are being thrown out with no basis whatsoever are the number of quote-unquote Gazans that are being killed while waiting in line for humanitarian aid. There's no check whatsoever. This is the New York Times that just came in at 9:04 p.m., Global update, Israeli troops killed dozens seeking aid near border, Gaza officials say. So now this is the new line that we're mowing down with machine guns all the people that we're trying to feed because we're carrying out ethnic cleansing. And Pierce is the one that is going to go on and has been going on repeating this.
Shabbos, you go back to your high school debate when people who are on the other side just put things out that are complete falsehoods. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with Pierce putting out numbers that at best are unsubstantiated?
So I would say two things. First of all, and I'm preaching to the choir here, the 50,000, 60,000, whatever the number is, Hamas explicitly does not distinguish between combatants and civilians. So of the 60,000, they're explicitly, very publicly admitting that they're including terrorists in that number. That's number one. Number two, they're also just including anyone who has died in Gaza for any reason since October 7th. So if you died of a natural death, that's included in the 60,000 number, or again, whatever the number happens to be. Having said that, though, this goes back to, you know, my high school debate. I try to agree with the opposition as much as possible. So whether it's 60,000 or 20,000, it's sort of grasping at straws. The reality is innocent civilians are being killed. Now, are they being deliberately killed? Are they being indiscriminately killed? That's the point we want to stress. Having said that, though, innocent civilians are being killed, which is why, as I constantly say, if you truly want there to not be civilian deaths, if you want this war to end, you would do anything in your power to force and to pressure Hamas to release the hostages immediately and surrender. And I made this point on Piers, and he literally responded, and I quote, "I wish it was that simple." But it is that simple. No one has been able to articulate a reason why it is that Hamas currently has the body of 22-year-old American citizen Omer Nuchra. For what purpose? For what reason? There is no reason they cannot release him without hesitation, without reservation right now. But the reality is, and ironically, this was, I don't remember if it was John Kerry or Jake Sullivan, but one of them made this point a few days ago, which is ironic coming from them. But they said, can you imagine how the political situation on the ground would have changed if after October 7th, the pressure was not on Israel, but the pressure was on Hamas, was on the dictatorial, tyrannical regime, that if you're a progressive, is the antithesis, is the antichrist of progressivism. If the pressure was on them to release the hostages, surrender, the war would be over tomorrow. And it's funny how Piers Morgan, he always tries to take the most far-right, controversial, unpopular figures like Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, takes their statements out of context and then asks us to respond, when he refuses to take the statements of the acting prime minister, of the acting foreign minister, who have said day after day after day, we will stop the war the minute Hamas releases the hostages and surrenders.
Right.
Piers will never talk about those individuals because it's really counter the narrative. It's a little awkward. He can talk about Bezalel Smotrich saying we're going to repopulate Gaza, but he will never talk, who, by the way, is not part of the war cabinet, something I had to remind Piers Morgan repeatedly. And actually, he confused Bezalel Smotrich with Gideon Sa'ar. He thought that Smotrich was the foreign minister, not the treasury, whatever the title.
Yes.
So finance minister. So. Again, it's just a total double standard. If you want to use the statements of Israeli political figures, but you're not actually going to use the statements of the prime minister who said, we want this war to end, we just need the hostages back and Hamas to disarm, then it shows that your arguments are really disingenuous.
Well, that's actually the last question I was going to go into. What's his obsession with Ben-Gvir and Smotrich? He will always, and the thing I always find so interesting when he talks about Smotrich, and yes, the polls vary a little bit, but recent polling has showed that Smotrich, who's finance minister, won't, his party, if there were an election, won't even cross the threshold to be in the Knesset, which kind of shows how perhaps relevant or influential he is, and coming from somebody who also has a system of government that's a parliamentary democracy, he also knows that not all government ministers have the same level of influence, regardless of the title. Shabbos, I don't know if there's anything you want to add about Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, but Daron, I love your point, and then I'm going to also invite Jen Mallon to join to help us wrap up.
Well, the point I made to Piers is, okay, but they're not part of the war cabinet. So you can find in the United States, you can find controversial far-right politicians or policymakers like Marjorie Taylor Greene who have said outlandish things, and it's detestable. One of the consequences of living in a liberal democracy, which Israel is, unlike all of its neighbors in the Middle East, is that you live in a populace and in a society with individuals who you believe have detestable views. I am very proud of the fact, and you can go on my social media and see the pictures of it, that I drove 4 hours from New York to D.C., shortly before October 7th, to protest Bezalel Smotrich, who was speaking at some type of pro-Israel conference. I'm very proud of my liberal credentials of protesting Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich. But the reality is, these are individuals who have zero impact on how the war is being conducted. These are individuals who have zero impact on Bibi Netanyahu's political calculations as it pertains to the war in Gaza. So if you're only going to show, as I said earlier, the statements of far-right politicians, but you're not going to show the statements of people who are actually conducting the war, like Gideon Sa'ar and like Bibi Netanyahu, then it just shows your arguments are in bad faith and you do not care about bringing a peaceful end to this. You do not care about long-term peace. You simply care about the views and the ratings, which Piers does. But again, it's not necessarily an attack, because that's just how the game is played in the 21st century. And that is a game that we must be playing if we are to have any hope of Western audiences being sympathetic to Israel in the future.
Thank you, Thomas. Daron, what do you want to... Anything to add about?
It's an attempt to obscure the incredible strength and will of the Israeli people. Piers Morgan, the left, the extreme right, do not want to accept that the Israeli people are united about destroying Hamas. We are willing to risk our lives, the lives of our most precious people, in order to kill our enemy. And what he does is he takes the radical views of two politicians that are totally off the rails and says it's because of these people and their influence on Prime Minister Netanyahu that the Israeli people are still fighting in Gaza. Meaning it's because of this 2%. No, the Israeli people, Prime Minister Netanyahu today is the most popular prime minister probably in Israeli history. He will probably win these elections once again because the Israeli people are unified. Not completely. We never are. The masses are showing up for reserves. The masses are going to war. You don't hear Israelis saying, oh, no, it's been too much fighting. We care about the hostages. Israelis are dedicated to finishing this war. It's exactly what we're going to do. That's what had us bring down Syria, Iran, much of Hamas and Hezbollah. And the attempt to obscure that strength and our will to bring about a justified destruction of Hamas is to make this a war between a few radicals that have pressure on the prime minister and ignore the fact it's the will of the Israeli people.
Thank you. Tyrone Chavez, amazing conversation. I want to bring in Jen Mallon. Yep, she's got the media expertise, a good friend, host of Come Home with Jen Mallon on CTN. Right, Jen? Am I getting that right? I didn't write it down. And I felt as long as we were having a conversation about something that's so much in the media, who better today than to close us in prayer and any kind of observations you'd like to make, Jen, before doing so.
Thank you for having me on today. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. I'm in the company of some brilliant people, and so I love this conversation. And I do want to just take... I want to throw our unity and our agreement as believers behind you too. The comment was just made that Israel is united. There are more for you than are against you. And that is the thing with media, is so often it can have us believe that the voices that are speaking are the majority, and I just want to affirm that they are not. They are very much the minority. And as it says, in my contribution today is to pray over the media mountain. And so, as it says in 2 Corinthians 7:14, with all of these things we've discussed, is that if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, their untruthful ways, their deceptive ways, their manipulative ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin where they are missing the mark, and I will heal their land. And so right now we just say, Abba, Avinu, our Father. First of all, we just want to pray for Pierce Morgan. We want to lift him up. And all of those that are thought leaders and influencers that are taking their platforms of influence that you have given them, and they are using it for evil, and they are using it for their own agenda, and they are using it for an untrue narrative. We just pray right now, Abba, you are bigger than he is, and you are well able to open his eyes that he may see, to open his ears that he may hear, to soften his heart, to turn his heart. I just pray that you would touch him and that you would literally maximize these sound bites and turn the narrative for Israel. We have seen you do crazier things than this, Lord, and we know that you love to be magnified and exalted, and you are a show off, and you are bigger than any showman. And so we just ask for signs, miracles, and wonders to come upon him and others like him. Even just take his mouth and turn it, like Balaam and Balak, when he went to curse Israel, he couldn't do it. We pray for truth in media right now. We just ask that truth will rise up big in the media realm. Deception, misinformation, distortion be exposed and corrected. Let righteous journalism flourish in our time. and let platforms of influence reflect integrity and justice according to Psalm 85:11. Lord, we pray, as we do every time that Jonathan gathers the teams together, we pray for Israel's narrative. Adonai, guardian of Israel, raise up a remnant of powerful yet humble communicators who have accurate storytelling abilities, who are authoritative to tell your story, strong representatives and strong ambassadors that are ready, enthusiastic, vivacious. I thank you, God, that they will protect the narrative of Israel in the nations. May stories of Israel's history, sovereignty, struggles for shalom be told with compassion and with absolute accuracy. Silence false accusations and those who twist truth for their own agendas, according to Psalm 121:4. Lord, we lift up Most High God, media leaders and influencers. We lift up stations and networks. Turn their hearts toward truth. And God, we ask for a righteous stewardship over these platforms. Release integrity. I thank you, no longer will they be swayed by clicks and ratings and sensationalism and pride and arrogance, but that God, they would be influenced by you. I pray that you would just lead them, guide them, draw them, even let it be unexplainable. We pray for advocates for Zion. We bless those who defend Israel in the public square. I bless Shabbos and Duran and Jonathan and all those, God, who have tirelessly given their lives to this cause. I pray that you just give them a freshness, give them courage, give them wisdom, and just give them supernatural protection today. Affirm them, energize them, remind them of why they are doing this very important work. We pray for alignment in the media mountain. O God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we just call this media mountain into alignment. We say, be united with justice and righteousness. Continue to raise up voices and channels to tell redemptive stories and continue to expose darkness and honor truth and life. And Lord, we pray for the audience. Open the ears and hearts of all who hear today. I thank you that they would become investigators, defenders, diggers, and researchers. Thank you that they wouldn't take things at face value, that they'll come out of the shallow and into the deep end, remove the confusion, and release discernment that only heaven can release. I pray for just a revival of hunger for truth, a revival of hunger for justice. And I thank you that you would just let your shalom be stirred in every listener. And then I just felt inclined to end just speaking Isaiah 62 as kind of a benediction and a declaration, because with media and those of us that are communicators, I think that's so important. Isaiah 62, for Zion's sake, how can I keep silent? For Jerusalem's sake, how can I remain quiet? I will keep interceding until her righteousness breaks forth like blazing light of dawn and her salvation like a burning torch. Nations will see your victory, vindication, and every king will witness your blinding radiance, O Israel. You will be called by a brand new name given to you from the mouth of Yahweh himself. You will be a beautiful crown held high in the hand of Yahweh, a royal splendor held in the open palm of your God. You will never again be called the abandoned one, nor will your land be called deserted, but you will be called my delight is in you, and your land my beloved wife, for Yahweh finds his delight in you, and he married your land. Jerusalem, I have stationed intercessors on your walls who will never be silent day or night. You reminders of Yahweh, take no rest and tirelessly give God no rest until he firmly establishes Jerusalem and makes her the praise of all the earth. See, Yahweh has proclaimed to the ends of the earth, tell my daughter Zion, look, Here comes your deliverer. See, he's bringing his reward, and his recompense goes before him. They will be called his holy people, the redeemed of Yahweh, and you will be known as those whom God loves, a city and a people not abandoned.
Amazing, Jen. Thank you so much. I think there's so many takeaways from this conversation, but one I had to write down, maybe that'll be a bumper sticker. God is bigger than Piers Morgan. And that is something that we can all take away. Shabbos, Doron, super conversation. Thank you for your time. It'll be interesting to see if going out and speaking about Piers has any impact on your going on Piers. But we will follow that and have you back. Let me just begin to wrap up as we always do, inviting people to not forget to click like, share, and comment the link to this program wherever you are. And we always offer an incentive. We call it From Jonathan's Bookshelf. Doron, you and I will speak about your book, which is Over Your Shoulder, in another episode. But for the last almost 2 years, we've been offering a copy of our remarkable book, Inspiration from Israel, the Miracle. All we ask that you do is like, comment, or share the link to this, and we pick one person at random to receive a copy of this program, of the book. We're always grateful that the podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. I don't know if anyone's ever done it, but I say if you're ever in the area, pop in and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And also thanks to the Coyne family for their special sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So please consider joining us to help continue the dialogue and build bridges. If you'd like to sponsor an episode in honor or memory of a loved one or special occasion, or your favorite journalist, whether he's real or fake, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. We'd always love to hear comments as part of a dialogue, and specifically relating to traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi programs. And you can be in touch with us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com as well. Please share this with others who will also find it of interest, and continue to join us right here as we bring you more meaningful conversations about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean mountains. God bless you.